Hello and welcome to Podcast Paroxysm. I'm Robbie Calland. Joining me today are Andrew Lynch and Jordan White. Gentlemen, how are y'all doing today?
I'm excellent, Robbie. How are you?
Wonderful. Jordan?
Horrible.
Horrible?
No, not really.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Anyway, we're here to talk some basketball, particularly playoff race basketball as we
racist.
Are, yeah, I know, very racist. As we near the end of this season, we're going to start in the West because it's less depressing. The Suns, the Mavericks, and who am I missing there?
The Grizzlies. How dare you leave out Marc Gasol?
I know. The Suns, we'll start with them because, Andrew, I know they're near and dear to your heart. And they're also probably the most fun of those three teams.
And they're the one that's going to miss the playoffs. So, you know, that's what,
sadly.
The Western Conference playoff hunt, I'll say, is only less depressing if you're not a Suns fan. Although that's not even true because, like I've said in a couple different places, this season, if you're a Suns fan and you end up getting depressed about Phoenix missing the playoffs, you're missing the forest for the trees because this season has just been so amazing. But their schedule sucks. They've got the Thunder tonight. Then they go to the Pelicans on Wednesday. Spurs Friday, back-to-back with Dallas, both on the road. Memphis after that. And then if they're somehow still alive, they get a little bit of a reprieve against the Kings, except, wait, DeMarcus Cousins devours the Suns. So.
Yeah, the Suns were in town in Atlanta recently, and I had the pleasure of being there for that, and they are just such a fun team.
They're awesome
to watch. I like getting to sit there and watch Eric Bledsoe and Goran Dragic run up and down the floor with the Morai next to them, and Gerald Green taking ridiculous shots and making them this year. They're just insanely fun. Miles Plumlee dunks on everything, and they're just such a fun team. I love what Hornacek has done with them. He just kind of lets them go play, which I love with a young team like that. He doesn't put too much restriction on what they do. It's clear that they have a goal in what they do, but they have a lot of freedom in how they get to that goal.
The one thing I mean, there are a lot of things I like about the Suns, but I think it's really cool that, you know, what started off as a concern, the Dragic, Bledsoe backcourt pairing as a concern, then we kind of just allowed it to be a gimmick until one of the two were traded. Probably Dragic was traded. Now it's become like a staple of their offense, and it's something that makes them go. Like, they do that initial pick and roll action at the top of the key, and they have one of the other two planted in the corner so they can kick it to the corner and then just initiate another action directly from that. And it's just like the engine that makes everything go. And so it's shifted from something that, you know, first we wondered whether it could work, and then when we saw it could work, it was just like, oh, okay, yeah, but they're only going to do this for so long. And then it's like, well, no, this is key to their identity.
Yeah, and I think that actually, like, that goes back to Summer League. It goes back even before we knew that Bledsoe was going to be a part of this offense, or I think even before they'd acquired Bledsoe, because with the guys they had at Summer League, I mean, they had P.J. Tucker basically playing the Bledsoe role and being the secondary ball handler. And when I asked him about it, like, he said that, yeah, that's whenever they were talking about offense, that's what Hornacek was talking about, was that they were going to need two guys who were going to be the primary ball handlers, and everything was going to revolve around that and setting multiple screens for them and then just getting to the corners and getting to the rim. So what's been fun about that is that just seeing PJ go from that role to going to, you know, the corners and basically living there and not going anywhere else on offense unless it's for an offensive rebound. So I think it's been a prime part of their identity since even before they knew what their identity was going to be, or at least since before we knew what their identity was going to be.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of Spursian in the way they like to use two ball handlers and set off-ball screens for the eventual ball handler. I remember when I talked to Coach Bud before the year about how he'd use particularly Lou and Jeff Teague together, Lou Williams and Jeff Teague. He talked about being able to do that. He liked having two ball handlers on the floor. And then, obviously, you look at how the Spurs play when they have Tony Parker and Manu Ginobili. They like to do that kind of stuff with, obviously, placing guys in the corners and working off of that. But the Suns kind of do it in a little bit faster tempo and kind of a revved up version of it where it's almost completely on those two guys. They don't have the post presences that maybe the Hawks do with Millsap or the Spurs do with obviously Duncan. They're just such a fun team to watch. Their defense just runs to the ball and chase guys all over the floor. And that's the part of their team that's really impressed me is the defensive aspect of them. Just you look at the pieces that they have and you don't think of any of them other than maybe Bledsoe, and Dragic has always been a pretty solid defender, but you don't think of the Morris twins or any of those other guys being defensive type players, and yet they make it work.
As someone who watched the Morai at KU, no, you definitely do not think of them as defensive players.
Yeah. I mean, and it's not like they're a stout defense, but they're good enough to get them some turnovers and get out in transition and let their offense kind of carry them.
Yeah, well, they're definitely like bend, don't break right now.
For sure.
And that's a credit to the coaching staff, and you know Hornacek's gotten so much of the credit, but his lead assistant Mike Lombardi got a lot of digital ink at the beginning of the season for what he's done with that defense. But he's definitely from that Chicago style of defense, the strong side pressure defense. And they don't necessarily have, you know, they don't have a Noah. Obviously, there's only one of those in the league, but. They've done, like you said, they've done the best that they can with the pieces that they have, and finding the right pieces to fit into that scheme, I think is going to be one of the biggest factors for the Suns going forward. But I'm curious, do you guys agree that Phoenix is the likeliest team to fall out of this playoff race?
I think Dallas falls out. I just have this...
Really?
Yeah, I don't know why, I just have this feeling. Also, you know, there's... Obviously, I think we're all rooting for it because I'd much rather see playoff Dragic than playoff Calderon.
I find it hard to root for any. Like, I mean, I pull for the Suns, obviously, but between Gasol of the Mark variety, Dirk, and Phoenix, I can't. I'm not going to be sad if any of those two make the playoffs. You know.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, there's obviously like guys you want to see on both teams, but I don't know. I still think the Suns and the Grizzlies make it.
I'm with Andrew. I think it's probably gonna be Memphis and Dallas. I mean, obviously, I'd love to see the Suns, but Dirk is like he's back to like 2011 Dirk, which is so much fun. Like he just makes everything it seems in late games. I think it was the Thunder game recently where he was just unconscious late. I just want to see one more good Dirk run, honestly, selfishly. He's such a pleasure to watch, and I think for so many years early on, we kind of took him for granted, and the closer he gets to the end, and the more we have seasons like last year where he was clearly physically not able to do some of the things, I personally am appreciating it more and more.
Yeah.
Watching him.
Makes sense.
But yeah, and then Memphis, they're still a ridiculously good defense, and they get just enough offense to kind of make it work.
It's a little weird, though. Memphis was going really strong, like maybe three-fourths of the way through the season. They finally started picking it up once James Johnson was inserted into the lineup. Even Mike Conley said that James Johnson was the reason they got so much better. And now
he doesn't play.
Yeah, now he doesn't play. So, yeah, you know, I don't know if it goes back to a practice thing. I don't know if it's an off-court thing. But now you're stuck back there with Tayshaun Prince, who's not doing anything, who's still, like, will pump fake a three-pointer, dribble in for, you know, a mid-range two-pointer. It's weird. I don't know why you'd mess with something like that, especially when it was working so well. And so that's the one thing that kind of has me worried about the Grizzlies is kind of like a reversion back to their like mid-season struggles and early season struggles.
Yeah. I mean, I think their defense is just good. I don't know if they really make much noise in the playoffs against anybody, whoever they end up playing in that first round. I think obviously their defense will keep it in close games for most of it. But I don't see them even making it like a particularly tough six-game series if they go.
Yeah, no. There's this like prevailing thought that the Spurs don't want to see the Grizzlies. And I get that stylistically, like, you never really want to see Memphis. And maybe I'm wrong. I've definitely been wrong on Memphis in the past. But other than the addition of Courtney Lee, like, how is this Memphis team significantly better than the team that went up against San Antonio last year and didn't do so well in the playoffs?
Well, it's not only that. It's also, like, if you look at the personnel that they have that, like, has made them better, like, it's not anything that's going to destroy San Antonio. Like, when they go with a lineup of Conley, Lee, and insert Miller instead of Tayshaun, and then do you know, Zebo and Mark up front, like, you know, they're gangbusters in terms of offensive efficiency, but it's like the Spurs are going to be like, oh, that's cute. We can still defend that. Like, that's not a problem for us.
Yeah, and like you said about Courtney Lee, is like, do we trust Courtney Lee in the playoffs to, like, not be bad Courtney Lee that takes a lot of three-five shots and, like, just kind of chucks the ball around a little bit?
I think maybe so.
Maybe ruins their flow.
I think so, because he's worked so well in their offense lately.
Uh-huh.
I don't know, I think because of the established hierarchy and the way the system is, where it's like, no, first we either do a pick and roll with Mike, or we do high-low action with Zebo and Mark. After that, we, like, you know, they play inside out. So I don't think we'll see, like, hero ball Courtney Lee.
Well, no, but I'm just saying, I could see him being, I don't know, I just see him taking a couple ill-advised, ill-timed shots at some point.
Yeah.
When they really don't need him to do that. Granted, he might make a couple of them because that's what he's been doing lately. But yeah, the West playoff race is going to be so much fun. And then we can turn to the East.
We can. We don't have to. I'm just saying, this is America.
Really don't. No sports to us here.
You know who is? Robbie, our nominal host, is forcing us to.
Yes.
Robbie, what team do you cover?
I work for the Atlanta Hawks.
Okay.
And who are currently up 31, 32, 32 at the half on Indiana? Because that's normal.
Yeah, that makes
sense. Well, it's kind of the new normal. I mean, like...
Indiana, man, that offense is... It's not working.
No, it's not. And there's,
like, at all.
Like, what... It's just baffling to see it crash this far down to earth.
Because they were never that good. And so you didn't think there was, like, you thought they were kind of, I didn't think they were near the floor of how bad they could be, but I didn't think the floor was this low.
Right, but, and, like, yeah, but they're never, their offense never, even though it was never, like, it scored that high, it never seemed that labored. Now it seems labored. Like, they're not getting anything. Their best shots from the past, like, 2 weeks was Paul George's, like, 55-foot three-pointer. Which, by the way, was insane.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, because Paul George isn't shooting the way he was.
No.
Which I think... I don't think this is necessarily what Paul George is. I think he's better than this. But I also think it speaks to the fact that I don't think Paul George is... the kind of offensive player he was for the first, 2 months of the season?
I think he is.
He was destroying everything and making just every three. I think he's always kind of been a little more in the middle of these two. I think he's a... Don't get me wrong, he's a really good player, but I don't think he's... and also the problem is they're starting to make him create more off the dribble. Whereas early in the year, they kind of had Lance doing more of that and letting Paul work off the ball, where I think he's better anyway. And it's just not working as well.
Well, I think they've got all these problems on offense, and they're concerning. I feel like a lot of it is just like, it's almost like a live band. These guys have been playing together for so long. They know what everybody does well, and they know what everybody does poorly. And when one person starts to do a few things poorly too often, like, everyone starts to get angry and the tension starts to build. And really, they just need to get to a point where they can tighten things up on offense. I think they can get there. What's really concerning to me is how their offensive struggles have bled into defense. Like, we've talked about all year how, like, Indiana was on pace for this historic defensive season. They're only a point and a half better than the Bulls right now per 100 possessions on defense. Like, they've come back to the pack significantly. So that's the more concerning thing to me, is if they can't get right on that end, they don't stand any chance against Miami, and the whole idea that maybe they don't even make the Eastern Conference Finals becomes a lot more realistic.
Oh, no. Sorry, Millsap is right hand is hurt.
I told you this is what's going to happen if you watch this Hawks.
Why? Game. Why? No, well, Harrell hit a three, but no. No, not don't hurt Paul again. Anyway, let's talk about
that
the
Eastern Conference playoff race.
About that Eastern Conference playoff race. Hawks' magic number is 4. 3 if they hang on up 35 against Indiana. 32. And the way the Knicks played today was not inspiring, except for...
J.R. Smith history.
Legend. We're going to talk about that. 22. 22 three-point attempts. NBA
not
record.
Enough.
NBA record holder, J.R. Take 30, J.R.
More.
Take 30.
Yeah, I'm a little pissed he didn't go for 30.
He slowed down in the third quarter with the three-point attempts, I think. He picked it up. Like, he took, I think it was 3, and he missed all 3 in the last, like, minute 20. He could have
that was the part where it started to get a little embarrassing. Like, I was all aboard the Josh Smith for 3 train, like, the entire game. And then it got to the point where it was kind of pressing. And I know that I'm using all these words to describe J.R. Smith, and I should not at all be surprised at what I'm saying. But it was like, okay, you're gunning for the record for most three-point attempts. I'm disappointed in you, J.R. Smith. I'm disappointed in myself for being disappointed in you. Whatever.
I mean, whatever. Go for it, J.R.
You do you.
Do you. I mean, the game was pretty well in hand. Like, you felt like at any time if the Knicks got it within, like, 4 or 5, LeBron was just kind of... be like, oh, okay, let me make another basket.
You said it wasn't an inspiring performance by New York, but for the first half, it kind of was. Like, there was this point in the second quarter where there were a lot of guys subbing in and out on both sides, and Woodson was he was at least playing Spoelstra to a stalemate on the matchups. When Chandler and Melo were in the game, but Stat was on the bench, and Bosch was guarding Melo at the time, they were kept running the Felton-Chandler pick and roll, and Melo, instead of filling up to the free throw line like he normally does as Chandler clears that area, he just kept staying on the block, so Bosch was nowhere near help on the pick and roll. And it's like, wow, the Knicks are actually doing something smart on offense, and they're adjusting to their opponent. And then there were a couple of other lineup changes, and all of a sudden Bosch was guarding Amari. And so Melo was filling out and leaving the block and getting out onto the wing, catching the ball, isolating, and reading the defense from there. And then all of that just went away in the second half. And I was just like, what what happened? It's like, you guys were basketballing at one point, and now you're Knicks-ing. Like, I don't get it.
Yeah, I mean... oh, the Knicks all season have just been so strange and bad, but especially strange.
And
I mean,
might make the playoffs.
And yet they're in the East, so they might make the playoffs, and Phoenix won't because the basketball gods are cruel and unfair.
It happens.
Yeah, I mean, what would I think? Phoenix would be the 3 seed in the East.
Yeah, I mean, well, they'd be tied for the 3 seed right now.
Tied for the 3 seed in the
half
East.
Game ahead.
And yet they're not. They might not be a playoff team. It's
kind
of
absurd. Does it really matter though? Here's my question:
no.
Does that everyone says that, and like it's this big deal? And I agree. It'd be nice to get Phoenix into the playoffs, and they'd be a lot of fun to watch more than the 82 games we got to see them. But does it really matter? Because they're not going to win the title. I mean, I guess you can make the argument that it matters because if you get the best teams in, then there's more integrity in the rounds leading up to the championship because the teams that advance beat the best teams that they could have.
Right.
But I guess I just completely undermined my own
doesn't
argument.
It also to some doesn't it also to some extent help the teams that, like, got in basically because they were just less bad than the other teams? Like, I mean, I'm not, like, okay, you get to go into the lottery. You didn't make the playoffs, so you didn't stumble into them, like, the bottom three or four of the East. No offense, Robbie.
None at all, thank you. The Hawks lost 14 out of 15 games at one point. I mean, they had, like, nine players, but, it was really bad for a stretch. No offense taken at all. I mean, the East has been miserable, and to be honest, I look at people come up with all these ideas, like, oh, well, if they just took the best 16 teams, this or that, and I really wouldn't mind that at all. They're never going to get rid of conferences because of travel. Or at least not in the near future because of travel. And I think you could probably make it work, but it would be a lot of work on the NBA's part to try to make travel even decent for the teams if they took away conferences. But no, there's no offense taken. The Hawks are, what, they're 33 and 42.
Going to be 34 and 42 pretty soon.
So there's no offense taken to a team 9 games under 500.
It's actually
probably
kinda
not being deserving of the playoffs.
It's funny. There are a lot of people who are kind of blaming Atlanta for letting the Knicks back in the playoffs. Like, oh, Atlanta just choked this way. And every single time, I'm just like, no, no, no. Like, do you realize that they are all of them hurt?
Yeah. I mean, Elton Brand was playing 42 minutes a night.
That's what I'm saying.
I love Elton Brand, by the way.
Elton's playing 10 minutes, every other game.
Nah, he's killing it this year. He should be a 10, 12-minute a night guy on, on a good team. He could
totally
be there.
You don't want him, if he's,
No, you don't want to play him 40. And, the thing is, he was producing well. There was a game where he played 42 minutes and was, a +6. And we lost by 9.
Sure.
In the 6 minutes he was off the court, I think it was a -15. I think Gustavo played, or... No, that was the game Mike Scott had to play center because Gustavo was hurt, too.
Mike Scott got to play center.
Yes. If you want to put it nicely.
Speaking of putting things nicely, and I don't mean to be devil's advocate on all these things, but this is something I've kind of been saying all season, so I feel the need to bring it up again. Is the East really that bad? Like, the top 6 seeds, maybe 7 really, going all the way to Charlotte. Like, I feel like the Eastern Conference playoffs are going to be pretty fun. They're not the greatest teams in the world, but they match up well enough that
Sorry,
I think the 7th game series...
Did you just say they're going to be
fun? I don't think
yes,
fun's the
fun.
Right word.
Fun.
Fun is not
Joakim
right
Noah
word.
Is fun. DJ August... Joakim
no,
Noah is
you
fun.
Do not, don't you say DJ Augustine is fun. I will come through this computer and find you right now, DJ Augustine.
Kirk Heinrich is fun. Do you hear me, Bulls fans? You Kirk Heinrich blasphemers.
No.
He's fun when he's not on the Bulls. I promise you that used to be true.
He was on the Hawks. I remember Kirk Heinrich. He was fun for a year.
Young Kirk
See?
Heinrich was a lot of fun.
The defense rests.
Young Kirk Heinrich.
I think
the Wizards. John Wall, Bradley Beal.
Okay, I am excited for the Wizards.
How about?
But you know we're just going to get that inevitable, one bad matchup in the first round that's just going to leave a sour taste in everyone's mouth.
You basically are saying Chicago-Brooklyn, right? Or are you playing the odds and saying one of them will be bad?
This Chicago-Brooklyn.
I think Chicago-Brooklyn is just going to be horrible.
It doesn't even have Nate Robb like
You don't want to see Joakim Noah versus Mason Plumlee? Tell me you don't want to see that.
I don't want to see that.
You're a liar.
I am
you don't know
excited,
what you want.
I'm excited to see playoff Livingston, just to see what that's like.
Yeah?
Because he's had an awesome year.
Brooklyn's been a strange team, too. I mean, they were killing it for a little while there, and now they've kind of... They're still playing pretty well, aren't they? I mean...
Yeah, they've been playing really well
he's
the first year. I mean, and that's the thing. All these teams at the Eastern Conference are playing really well, and if you look at the schedule, a lot of them are playing really well since the first of the year, which is when they started playing Cleveland and Detroit and Boston and Orlando, so you have to take it with a huge grain of salt.
Right.
But I mean, they still there are enough players on each team to make for fun playoff series.
Like, yeah, Toronto, I'm excited for playoff Al Jefferson.
Playoff, like, I'm really, playoff Mick Roberts.
Oh, playoff Mick Bob. That's good. Yeah, no, like, I'm actually really excited for whoever Charlotte plays. I think a Charlotte Heat series would be a lot of fun. It's not gonna happen because the Heat are gonna get the one seed, but I think Charlotte Miami would be lots of fun. They played a couple fun games this year already. I would really love to see that. Just because Al Jefferson would go for like 40 points a night, because the Heat couldn't guard him. They just wouldn't be able to in the post. And they might lose in five, but Al Jefferson would like set a scoring record in five games, which would be fun. Let's talk about Charlotte for a minute, because while we're talking about Al Jefferson, what have you thought of what they've done this season and the job Steve Clifford's done?
It's amazing. I didn't think, one, I mean, I didn't know much about Clifford coming in, but, you know, Charlotte's been such a carousel of coaches lately that I didn't think they'd find one who would stick and who'd be able to instill defensive principles that the team would actually pay attention to, and he's just done an incredible job with the culture of that team. You know, and then you thought it was even more puzzling when they bring in Al Jefferson, who are a coach who's supposed to be defensive-minded. It's like, well, those two don't mix, but Jefferson's been really good this year. He hasn't been a tremendous defender, but he's been fine. And just the way that he's used Big Al, the way that he's deployed everybody, you know, Kemba Walker's made really great strides this year. I like Clifford and Hornacek to me, the like should be like co-coaches of the year. Also, Matt Moore came up with the best nickname ever for Al Jefferson, which is the Cookie Monster of Clutch.
Didn't he ask him about that? And Al just said, "I like cookies."
Yeah. He's like, "So we came up with this nickname for you, the Cookie Monster of Clutch, because you know during fourth quarter you just om nom 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 points, and Al just takes like beat, beat, beat. I mean, I like cookies, and that was it."
That's fantastic. Andrew, Bobcat thoughts?
I mean, obviously, Jordan took my word. It's amazing. I love what Charlotte's done this year. More importantly, I think that there's something to build on for next year and for years after that, whereas the last time they made the playoffs, they basically mortgaged the, you know, five or six seasons after that in order to get there.
Are you saying they shouldn't have signed Tyrus Thomas to that deal?
It was a leveraged risk.
How dare you?
I'm sorry, continue making your point. I had this for you, that way, because I hated that contract more than anything when it happened. That's like the worst contract since maybe like Rashard Lewis.
Oof.
I'm going there.
Okay.
But anyway, continue.
So the question to me...
making some kind of point, and I jumped in over...
Oh, just... I mean, we know... I think at this point we kind of know who the Bobcats are going to be in the playoffs. They're going to be a lot of fun. They're probably not making any kind of real run, especially with their offense, although their offense has been a lot better post-All-Star break and post, I think, since the new year. With all that said, I think the offense going forward is really going to be what they focus on improving. I love Josh McRoberts, don't get me wrong, but if you can get somebody who can actually operate in a pick and roll and finish at the rim and not just, you know, pop out to the perimeter and throw some really fun passes, which McRoberts has that going for him. He's a huge part of their offense, but he's a huge part of an offense that's, you know, bottom 10 in the league. So... and then, of course, there's the Michael Kidd-Gilchrist question and how high his ceiling actually is when his jump shot form looks like a pretzel. So...
It is... it's hideous. I don't know how he even makes his own do what it does. It seems like it would be...
It's like the
borderline painful.
It's an insect, and his hands are a Venus flytrap.
That's a good way to put it. Like, you watch some guys, you know, I watch, like, Joakim Noah, and I'm like, I guess I can...
Tornado.
I'm like, I guess I can kind of see how he does it, but not a whole lot. Michael T. Goodness, I don't even know how that would even be a natural feel to, like choke in. It's like, put the hands on the outside of the ball, kind of push it. Okay, maybe. Sean Marion, like, he just kind of pushes it, sure. But, like, Kid Gilchrist, it just, I don't know who taught him to shoot like that or, like, why he ever learned. I'd be really interested, like, I don't know if he's ever told anybody that. Like, I'd be really interested to find out, like, what, I don't know how you would even ask that question.
It's actually, no one actually ever bothered to teach him how to shoot. He just kind of did it one day, and the coaches were like, ah, I mean, all right, we'll get to it later. And they just never got to it.
Because I would be really... I just think the problem is I don't know how you even ask that question without sounding mean.
Michael, who taught you how to shoot? There, that's what you asked.
Like, Michael, why do you shoot the way you do? Like, I don't know if there's a proper way to do that without really kind of angering him.
Like, hey, Michael, who's your shooting coach? Just so I can get in touch with him.
The flip side of that is, I mean, he's got offensive skills. He's obviously has the athleticism and the basketball IQ to be a good cutter if he were in a system that emphasized that. He's got it, and I have to give credit to, you know, friend of the podcast, Chris Barnwell, who wrote over at Rufus on Fire that, you know, he's got the game to be a post player and a cutter. He doesn't necessarily have the body for it, obviously, the way the NBA is going, but if, I mean, he can be Sean Marion without a three-pointer. And that only has so much value in the modern NBA, but it has value, you know, as a...
Especially with his defensive
quality. Yeah,
exactly. So it's going to be on either Clifford or whoever ends up coaching MKG in the future, if he's not a Bobcat for very long, to make the most of his skill set. And part of that is having better offensive players around him. Because the more dependent you are on Michael Kidd-Gilchrist on your offense, the lower your ceiling is going to be, is how I'll phrase that.
Yeah, well, you know, you talked about how you don't think he's in the right system or he's not utilized the right way. I look at that in a similar way to Marvin Williams' development. Marvin is similarly, like, I think he has the skill set to be a good cutter. You can post him against smaller guys. He's got a wide body. But he was always like a spot-up guy playing on the perimeter and also was asked to do, when he did get the ball, he was playing for Mike Woodson, so it was like take somebody off the dribble, which Marvin could never do. And I think playing for as many years as he did in that system next to Joe Johnson and doing all that just really stunted his growth. And, you know, I think Marvin could have been a solid player in the NBA, like a pretty decently good player, but I don't think he ever really developed right. And it goes back to the whole, we always talk about the fit coming out of the draft, and it comes up a lot with when people argue, well, people drafted player X over, like, Kawhi Leonard. And it's like, well, Kawhi went to kind of the perfect situation for him.
Yeah.
I think Kid Gilchrist, his development's going to be interesting, and, you know, you wonder if he's going to be a guy that the Bobcats look at as part of their future. But I think Steve Clifford, being a defensive guy, will probably want someone like him on the team for the future because of the way he does. He's so good at defending guys, even if LeBron and Melo score 61 on him. It's funny that they did that against him, considering his good defensive play. But what? You want to talk about the Knicks non-JR category?
The what?
Yes. The Knicks?
What?
In a non-J...
Why?
I don't know.
The only thing about the Knicks...
They're in the news.
The only thing I've paid attention to with the Knicks for the most part is if they do or don't make the playoffs. Not because, like, oh, I don't want them in the playoffs. I don't want to watch them play. It's because then maybe Denver gets a good pick and then finally, like, you know, they get an exciting rookie, and there's someone exciting to cover here.
Are you saying that Jan Vesely isn't exciting?
You know, Jan and I haven't really hit it off yet.
No,
maybe he is. I know it's surprising. You know what? We just haven't had the time to connect.
You'll have the summer.
Yeah,
the summer.
Maybe.
The summer of Jan.
I don't know, because he may not be back. Although. He's impressed the coaches, apparently. But anyways,
my dream scenario is for the Knicks to make a really strong push, miss the playoffs by one game, and then get the number one pick.
Yeah.
Like, my Schadenfreude levels would just be through the roof. I probably couldn't take any more Schadenfreude for the next, like, year or so.
Oh, don't say that.
It'd be delicious.
I am very eager for the Phil Jackson regime era. I think this is going to be fun, one way or the other. I think it's going to work.
We're either going to get a sweet book out of it, or the Knicks are going to become good. Like, the book, that's, like, 6 years from now, we're going to get the best book ever about James Dolan.
Listen, I mean, just because it's the Knicks doesn't mean you can move past the process versus results mindset, I don't think. It might not work just because there's so many just factors that are going to push against success. With that said, if they go about things the right way, at least in the majority of their decisions, I think that's such an improvement for this organization that that's going to be a success on its own. And I think that's an attainable goal. I think that's realistic.
I just worry about how they're going to get there, though, because they don't have any draft picks, so they can't bring in any real young talent. You know, a lot of their contracts, they don't have room next summer, you know, assuming that Melo gets his money. And so while I think the Jackson thing is maybe good in a vacuum or without context, but then when considered with the rest of the team and how strapped they are for any sort of asset moving forward, like I don't see how much of a difference he's going to be able to make in the next 3 or 4 years alone.
And that's the thing. I think it's a 5-year thing. Like, you have to, they're going to have to be patient. And so that's where the process versus results thing comes in, because
process, 5 years is where it starts. Like,
right. That's what I'm saying. Like, you have to start laying the groundwork now in terms of best business practices and that kind of thing, so that when you get to the point that you do have assets, you can be in a position to, you know, have them succeed as quickly as possible. Because if you get to that point, patience is going to be very thin if it hasn't run out already. So,
okay, we're going to talk. We're going to wrap this thing up here with some playoff talk. Who we think's going to win it all? Who's going to be in the conference finals? Who wins those conference finals? All of that good stuff. So we can see how wrong we are in a month. I guess kind of let's start in the East, because Miami and Indiana. Miami wins today. Indiana hasn't been playing particularly well of late. Are they still your picks for the Eastern Conference Finals?
Yep.
Short and sweet. Andrew?
Yeah, I'm going down with the ship. I don't care if Indiana scores 23 points and a half against the Hawks, who have 4 players on their roster. The Pacers will be in the Eastern Conference Finals. That series will go at least 6 games.
You have Miami winning?
Yeah, Indiana's not going to beat Miami.
Okay, Jordan?
Yeah. Bucks in 6.
Bucks in 6.
I was really hoping we'd get through this without one of those. You guys.
Suck it, Trebek. I think that's going to be the consensus. I'm with you guys. I still think Indiana has too much. And they'll figure it out here. Western Conference, though, a little more fun. Are the Spurs your favorite, or are you sticking with the Thunder? I think most of us predicted the Thunder at the beginning of the year to come out of the West.
I'm going with the Thunder. The only way the Spurs make it is if the Thunder get knocked out early, because the length and athleticism, their ability to close out on the Spurs shooters, like, the Spurs still get the same looks against the Thunders do against everybody else, but they're not open. It's labored. And so, I go with Thunder to make it to the finals.
Wait for it. Los Angeles Clippers.
Woo!
Wow.
Really?
Versus the San Antonio Spurs in the Western Conference Finals. The Clippers are going to the NBA Finals. I don't know how much I actually believe this, but I'm going to go on the record as saying it, so if it happens, and if it doesn't happen, I'll just delete the podcast, because that's how the internet works, right?
There you go. Okay, so Clippers over Spurs. I still have the Thunder over the Spurs for many of the same reasons that Jordan said, and it's one of the very few predictions that I could have right from the beginning of the season. I predicted Lou Williams would be sixth man of the year. Whoops.
I predicted Andre Kirilenko, so.
We were all great about our preseason predictions. I did think that the Knicks would go down in flames and Mike Woodson.
Sorry. I'm trying to wrap my mind around.
Straight chalk.
Straight chalk. All right.
Straight chalk. Thunder Heat. Once again.
Yes, please.
It would be fun.
You both have the Heat winning in six games?
No.
I have the Thunder winning.
Oof. Thunder and seven.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Thunder and seven. Yeah. If that's the case. Because I think they'll steal one in Miami and then wrap it up at home. So, yes. Correct. And, Andrew, who do you have in your Clippers Heat finals?
God, did I really pick Clippers Heat?
Yeah, you really did.
As you can see, we thought this through really far.
I've run so many simulations on this, it's not even funny. 10,000 at least in the last hour. Heat, LeBron James, and no one there. Here's my upset prediction for that series, though. There will not be a single flagrant foul.
What?
What?
Really? What? First off, I've never heard anybody make any kind of that prediction like that. No flagrant foul. In the NBA
series,
today?
Blake Griffin, championship on the line, no flagrant fouls in that series.
No.
Whether that's because I think it'll be over in four games or not is a different question. No flagrant foul.
No flagrant foul.
Like 70 okay. Free techs, though. It's going to be a lot of technicals.
Okay. Is there any situation that you see an Eastern Conference team beating out the Pacers and the Heat? Is there one that you could see, maybe not as a probable thing, but that you wouldn't be surprised by one of the other Eastern Conference teams making it to the conference finals? Or do you just, no way?
With the typical, you know, barring a major injury caveat, no. No chance. That's what you got.
No. Just curious if you thought, like, the Raptors or somebody could give the Pacers a series in the semis.
No, I don't think so.
No? Okay. Just curious. So we have two Thunder and one Heat final predictions, and Andrew has the Clippers in the finals to melt everyone's brains. Excellent. Well, guys, we'll talk again in the playoffs, I'm sure, at some point. Keep checking on Hardwood Paroxysm for all of your playoff updates and basketball stuff.
Hell of a sign-off, Robbie.
I'm cooking. All right. For Andrew Lynch, Jordan White, I'm Robbie Callen. Thanks for listening.
All right.